Thank you, Mike. Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Matt. If you could have Psalm 104 open before you, please. And let's begin this meditation. The psalm begins and ends the same way. If you look at verse 1 and verse 35. With the intention of the psalmist, his purpose, what he wants to achieve. And that is to bless the Lord with all that he is. You'll notice it says that, "Oh my soul." And this psalm comes together with Psalm 103. And the first verse of 103 helps us understand what he means when he says, "Oh my soul." When it says, "Bless the Lord, oh my soul, and all that is within me." Basically, everything that I am. I want to come and bring it and bless the Lord. And I often think to myself, well, how can I, a human, bless the Lord? Usually we say, God bless you, because God can bless, but how am I meant to bless this mighty king? Well, the root meaning of the word is to kneel. It's an act of adoration. It's a praise. It's a salute. It's a be still. It's a thank God. That's what we're saying when we say bless the Lord. And how is the psalmist going to accomplish his intention to bless the Lord with all that he is? Well, he's going to do it through this epic, beautiful, and vast meditation on God and all that God has done. O Lord my God, you are very great. Is going to be his central focus. And we're going to look at three meditations, split into three. The first one, O Lord my God, you are very great. He set the earth on its foundations. The next one, O Lord my God, you are very great. The earth is full of his creatures. And finally, O Lord my God, you are very great. You send forth your spirit. And so today we're going to join him in thinking about how great our God is. So it begins, "Bless the Lord, O my soul. O Lord my God, you are very great. You are clothed with splendor and majesty, covering yourself with light as with a garment, stretching out the heavens like a tent. He lays the beams of his chambers on the waters. He makes the clouds his chariot. He rides on the wings of the wind. He makes his messengers winds, his ministers a flaming fire." I hope you realize at the start there, this is a very personal song. My God, my soul. And through the majority of the psalm, he actually speaks directly to God. You'll see it in the first few verses there, where he says, "You are clothed, you covered the deep as with a garment. At your rebuke they fled. You set a boundary," and he speaks directly to God. But then at other points, it's like he pauses and notices that there's other people around, and he wants them to see how great God is. So he moves and says, "He," and you'll see it there, "He lays the beams of his chambers. He makes the clouds his chariots. He makes his messengers winds. He set the earth on its foundations." And right at the beginning gets us to ask the question, can you say my soul and can you say my God? Is this a personal worship of the Lord for you, or are you just one of the crowd that the rest of us are talking to? And it challenges us right at the beginning to think about where we stand before this mighty God. Now, currently, we're thinking a lot about kings and queens, aren't we? And I don't know if any of you have seen the sort of looking back at the Queen's coronation and the royal robe she wore, Buckingham Palace. And I love that gold state coach, you know, that gold coach with the eight horses. And all these important messengers going throughout the kingdom, calling people to the attention. There's a new queen on the throne. And this is what the psalmist is doing in this first part. He's pointing us to the splendor of God, the splendor of the king in verses 1b to 4. First of all, his royal robes, you'll notice there. You are clothed. with splendor and majesty. Light is your garment. The robes of God are splendor and majesty and light itself that he gathers around him. Then it talks of his tent. His tent is the very heavens themselves that he stretches out. He talks about his palace. He lays the beams of his chambers on the waters. And when I first read that, I thought, okay, so on the sea. But no, it's not. It's the waters above the firmament. It's on the clouds. The New Living Translation says it to help us understand it, on the rain clouds. And the picture is of God's foundation of his palace is right up in the heavens, way above us. His chariot, not a gold state coach drawn by 8 coaches, but clouds and the wind itself. And then he talks about his angels. He makes his angels, that you could change that to angels. Hebrews 1 verse 7 tells us that's what this means. So his angels, his messengers, and remember, they're not omnipresent like God. They can't be everywhere at once. He has to send them to do his bidding, and they move like the wind, like fire across the sky, are the power of his messengers. So the splendor of the king is put before us. But then he wants to talk to us in the rest of the psalm about the work of this incredible God, this amazing king. And he begins in verses 5 to 9 with his building project. All kings are famous, aren't they? Particularly in ancient days, for their building projects. Cities and gardens and palaces, and especially temples, which you can still see today. But God built the world. God laid the world on its foundations as a master builder. Universe, gravity, the orbit around the sun, he put the earth there. Any closer, we'd be burnt to a crisp. Any further away, we'd be frozen solid. He put it right where it had to be. Verse 5, he set the earth on its foundations so that it should never be moved. You covered it with the deep as with a garment. The waters stood above the mountains. And this is directly from Genesis 1, verses 1 and 2. Where the earth is there, the water covers the earth, and the Spirit of God hovers over the surface of the water. And then the psalmist explains what happens. At your rebuke, they fled. That's the waters fled. The mountains rose. The valleys sank down to the place that you appointed for them. You set a boundary that they may not pass, so that they might not gain, so they might not again cover the earth. And there's this picture of ancient days with the master builder rebuking and thundering at his builders to get that massive stone exactly right in this palace. And our picture is of God rebuking and thundering at the very waters and the very mountains themselves, and they have to respond. And they move. And Everest shoots up 8,850 meters. And the Mariana Trench in the Pacific Ocean drops down 11,034 meters. And the water recedes. And Genesis tells us the land is formed. Do you know, if you put Everest in the bottom of the Mariana Trench, it would still be 2,000 meters below the surface of the sea? This incredible earth that God created. And when the psalm was written, the psalmist was countering those who refused to acknowledge God and instead worshipped created things like the sun and moon and stars and animals. And Romans 1 tells us became futile in their thinking and foolish. Sadly, there's a whole new generation today being led to the same futile and foolish thinking by people like David Attenborough and Brian Cox, to do exactly the same thing. This psalm refocuses on the truth and gives the glory back to the immortal God. Brothers and sisters, this world was created. And that's what this psalm tells us. Then in verses 10 to 13, he focuses again on the work of the king, and this time on the incredible miracle of water. How he gives the earth its drink. You make springs gush forth in the valleys. They flow between the hills. They give drink to every beast of the field. And beast of the field here means wild animals. So we're talking about the wild animals. And representing them, the wild donkeys quench their thirst. Beside them, the birds of the heavens dwell. They sing among the branches. From your lofty abode, that palace we thought about in the heavens, you water the mountains and the earth is satisfied. That word satisfied means flourishes, to be full, to have plenty. And we all know there is plenty of food and water in our world. It's just sadly man's selfishness that means there are people who are hungry. But the earth is satisfied with the fruit of your work. And here we have this miracle that we have come to take for granted because we just turn on a tap and water comes out. But it's the miracle of water, and it really is a miracle. God created it and the mechanisms needed to bring it to the animals and to his people. Springs in the valleys so that every wild animal may drink. Rain sent from above. You'll notice in verse 10 and 13, the psalmist wants us to understand where he says, "You make, you water, it's your work." Once God built this earth and filled it and set it in motion, it is sustained by him every single day. God is involved. It's not random. It's not accidental. He set it in its place. And so we're left in this, after this first part of the meditation, to say together, if you'd like to join me, "O Lord, my God, you are very great. He set the earth on its foundations." Thank you, Mike.